Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, there was plenty across the new Cabinet Minister Jim O'Callaghan's desk when he was appointed as Minister for Justice, Home Affairs and Migration, all three. That's just a couple of weeks ago. But among the issues he'll be dealing with are Garda numbers, Garda visibility, violence against women and, of course, migration. So what are the priorities and aims for the minister in his first few weeks? Well, he is with me now, Minister Jim O'Callaghan. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
And congratulations on being in the full cabinet. You turned down a junior job.
Well, thank you very much, Pat. Yeah, it's a real privilege to be made Minister for Justice, Home Affairs and Migration. I'm also conscious it comes with grave responsibilities, but listen, I will work at it tirelessly and I'll do the job to the best of my ability.
Now, the headline I offered was that you would lay out your stall, your priorities. So what are they?
Well, the first thing I suppose I want to do is I want to try to ensure that our communities are safe and enjoyable places to live. And I suppose what that means is that our laws are enforced so that people aren't subjected to criminal activity or criminal behaviour, particularly attacks of violence against them. In order to do that, we need a strong and well-resourced Garda Síochána. So that's my primary focus. I'm also conscious, Pat, in terms of violence, that, as you mentioned in your introduction, we do have a scourge of violence against women in our community. My predecessor, Helen McEntee, did a very good job in really pushing that forward as on the political agenda. I also want to do that, and I think maybe as a man and as a father, it's something I can also advance, because really we need to have a conversation with men and boys in respect of it. As you said, I'm also a Minister for Home Affairs. Home Affairs really deals with national security, and I suppose, as the Taoiseach has said repeatedly, we need to take our national security much more seriously and we need to resource it more. And finally, just in the area of migration, I'm well aware that immigration has had a very positive benefit in Ireland over the past 25 years when it's been, I suppose, common in Ireland. But I want to see a stricter migration system that is fair, but which is firm.
Which also should be speedy. Now, various ministers who've had responsibility for this area have pledged a speedy response, because the injustices that arise when people are in direct provision or whatever, awaiting some sort of decision, they become more Irish than the Irish themselves, to use that old phrase, while they're waiting 8-9 years. Now, even though that wait may be caused by their own legal challenges, it's just not right.
Yeah, of course it's not right. And it needs to be speeded up. And in fairness, the process is speeding up. Last year in 2024, we had 14,156 applications for international protection processed at first instance. Of them, 9,227 were refusals. But we need to let people know fairly promptly if they're not going to be allowed to stay in Ireland so they can leave and get on with their lives.
What does prompt mean? How many weeks?
I would like to see it done within a period of 6 months. We need to really ensure it's done properly. What's happening now, of course, is that the delay is at the appeal section. People can appeal it to the International Protection Appeal Tribunal. That delays it considerably. We need to resource that more. But the Migration Pact, which is big news throughout Europe, and I know there's been some controversy about it here, but the whole purpose of the Migration Pact, when you're listening to it in Europe, is to speed up the process.
One of the elements of that is going to be perhaps processing people, not in Rwanda, but in places outside the jurisdictions of the countries that the people propose to enter. Is that something that you go along with?
Well, I would like to see a speedier system. Like, we should be able to process the system here promptly. I was out yesterday in City West, where we have the Ukrainian hub. It's also now being used for the processing of international protection families. It was a real eye-opener in terms of its efficiency, and the state is getting on
but
top
you know what
of
I mean?
This issue.
The people are already in the door. Now, if you take it, and I don't want to model our country on anything Trump might do, but the idea that at the border, if you don't have the requisite papers or the requisite asylum-seeking credentials, you don't get in.
And the immigration officials at Dublin Airport are getting much more strict in respect to that. But if somebody arrives and they claim international protection, they have to have their application processed promptly. And that's really where the delay has been in the past in the appeal structure. Under the new legislation that's going to be brought in, we have to bring it in by 2026, we're going to see much tighter timelines. And it's only fair for this country, I think, that we have those quick processing materials, but also for the individuals who are making the application. But can I just say, in terms of a stricter process, like it is now clearly the case, if you're seeking international protection and you're not entitled to it, you shouldn't come here, because you won't be granted international protection and you'll be asked to leave or forced to leave.
No, but the point is that you may well be in the system for, as you say, the best case scenario seems to be 6 months.
Yeah.
So you're actually in Ireland for 6 months. You won't be behind bars. So you are presumably free to go, free to evade the authorities, free to cross the border, free to enter Britain, maybe to, go to work there?
If you get a determination that you're not entitled to international protection, it is very difficult for you to continue to operate here. It's very difficult for you to get work, and we have to ensure that people who are refused international protection are forced to leave through deportations or through voluntary returns.
Do you think, though, that that is really the case, that it would be difficult to continue to work? We learned this morning that our unemployment rate is less than 3%. There is a shortage of labour. There will be employers out there who will take people on without papers.
I don't think so. But in terms of the issue about migration, unfortunately, a lot of the discussion is about international protection. International protection is a small percentage of the numbers of people coming in. Obviously, people who are workers from EU countries are entitled to come here to work. People who get work permits, as we look in our hospitals, they're perfectly entitled to work here. So that processing of people who want to work here is still going on very effectively, and we need to ensure that those work permits are given out on the basis of the needs in the country. The smaller section and the contentious section is international protection. And my concern, the reason why I think it's important to be strict in respect of it, as you know, we've had a very positive story on immigration in this country in the past 26 years. It's done really well. Anyone who goes to sports events with young kids will see it. I want to ensure that we protect that. And I don't want to allow that contentious issue of tents and people on the streets become a distraction to it.
Do we need to change our visa regime to make it more efficient and maybe more responsive to the needs of the economy?
I think we do, and I'm very lucky. I'm being assisted in my job by Colin Brophy, also by Niall Collins. I've spoken to Minister Brophy in respect to this. We need to have a much more efficient and improved system in terms of immigration visas, so we can look across our economy. What areas of expertise do we need? And then we should expedite those who are seeking to get into the country to work in those areas.
Now, let's go back to the Gardaí and Garda numbers. And we know a new recruitment campaign has just been launched by the Garda Commissioner. And you want to see Gardaí not in offices, but back on the beat, visibility. But I thought we had civilianised as much as we could of the Garda force.
Well, I think we need to civilianise more. We have 14,100 members of the force at present, and we have 3,500 civilians. So the civilians are doing a lot of the work that previously was done by members of An Garda Síochána Síochána. We need to both get our Garda numbers up, but also we need to get more Gardaí out in the street. Every member of the Oireachtas, by the way, agrees with me in respect to that request.
But who are these people? I mean, the programme for government says remove Gardaí from administrative, technical and other non-core duties to allow them to focus on police. So what sort of things are they doing?
You go down to the courts. We have too many Gardaí down in the courts.
Hanging around.
Not in fairness to them. They're required.
But they have to hang around. That's the way
our
courts work.
They're required by the legal system. We need more court presenters who present the prosecutions in the district courts in respect to people accused of summary offences. But the Gardaí want to get out there. I said it to the Commissioner. I was down at Irish Town Garda Station with them the week before last. I said, I want to see more Gardaí on the street. And this is when the new legislation is commenced. We've new statutory bodies are going to have responsibility for An Garda Síochána, the Garda Board. I will have an input in terms of the strategy and the strategic report in respect to the Gardaí. And the one thing I will be emphasising is I want to see more Gardaí in our community. Listen, we're in a very advantageous position, Pat. You look at other countries, certain communities in other countries, they don't want to see the police force in the area. here, any politician that goes to a public meeting, the one thing they say was, we want to see more Gardaí. So it's a fantastic advantage we have that the Garda Síochána are so valued by the community. I just want to make sure that they're out on the ground as much as possible.
Numerically, where are we? I mean, the promise of 1,000 Gardaí recruited a year, of course, is a rate of attrition at the other end. Yeah. Gardaí retiring, and they can actually get out with a decent pension quite early. Any prospect of changing
that? Well, we've 14,191 Gardaí at present. As I said, we've 3,500 civilians. We want to try to recruit 1,000 Gardaí a year. It's difficult.
Is that 1,000 net?
We want to recruit 1,000, and there will obviously be retirements and resignations, but we can manage to change the law to up the retirement age to 62. You know, I've been, some applications have come to me to permit people beyond the age of 62 to stay, and I'm happy to do that. We have a lot of expertise in Garda Síochána. And I think if you look at the recruitment in 2023, we had recruited 786. We had five batches then. Last year, 629. But like, the message I really want to give out for this interview, Pat, is that it is a great job. And I'd ask people to consider applying to join Garda Síochána. The good news now is you can join if you're between 35 and 49. Previously, that was precluded. And there's lots of people, as we know, doing sedentary jobs, sitting in offices, bored. It's a very exciting job. It's varied. You meet interesting people. And it's a job that's worth doing.
Do you come in at the bottom of the scale?
Well, you come in as a Garda, but you know, you can progress quickly. And the job of a Garda is also a very interesting job. It is not as though all the interesting jobs are at the top level in the Garda Síochána. In fact, the interesting jobs on the ground, investigation, are being done by Detective Garda, Detective Sergeants, and at that level. I think that's what people need to look at. For some reason, people don't consider it as a job. I just appeal to them to consider it. It's a really worthwhile job, and it's exciting and interesting.
Now, the Fianna Fáil manifesto had promised to introduce a domestic violence and abuse disclosure scheme, so there'd be a register of people who might be guilty in the past of coercive control or other domestic abuse. That is not in the programme for government. And, you know, it was being welcomed by...
It's
not quite the same thing, that there'll be a register that people can refer to. I think the promise is that the Gardaí will inform people, which, you know, how do you...
Well, listen,
how do you push that button?
I am committed to this. I spoke about it in opposition when I was as a backbencher. Fianna Fáil produced a document on combating violence against women. My colleagues, Mary Fitzpatrick and Fiona Loughlin, were instrumental in that as well. And one of the reasons we were so persuaded by this was we had the privilege of meeting Jason Poole, whose sister had been so brutally murdered by a man who had a history of violence against women. And can I just at one level say, we're unusual in this country. Like, if people are convicted of serious offences, it's very hard to find out who is convicted of those offences, unless a journalist is in court. We don't have a register of convictions that's publicly available.
Maybe you'll change your mind on this.
Sorry, I haven't changed my mind. I remain committed to it. I remain committed to establishing a register of domestic violence offenders. But it was always the case, Pat, in terms of the commitment that we made, that the Gardaí would have control of that. It would be operate the same way as the Sex Offenders Act. Like, we can't just look up there, let me see the Sex Offenders Act, and I can understand the concern about that. But in terms of this, the Gardaí would have information in respect of individuals who'd been convicted of violence against their partners or domestic violence, and the Gardaí would be able to warn and tell individuals who are in relation.
How do the Gardaí, I mean, this is the note from your department. The focus will be ensuring there are practical measures in place that an Garda Síochána can issue confidential warnings to persons who may be at risk in an intimate relationship. So how do they find out who in the neighbourhood of a particular Garda station is in an intimate relationship with someone who
When somebody is released from prison, they will have a probation service in respect of it. There'll be an awareness that these are people who are being convicted of assaults in the past. If they're getting into a new relationship, I think it's only fair that the women, generally it is women, who are commencing these new relationships are informed about it. Had Jennifer Poole been informed about the violence, the history of her partner, she would not even have commenced a relationship with him. So listen, I've no doubt, there's lots of people telling me, oh, that's going to be very complicated and legislatively complex. But I want to achieve a mechanism where there's a method whereby people in new relationships can be informed of the past of their partners if they've been involved in violence.
Now, the other thing on your desk is the UAE extradition treaty. How ready is that to be signed?
It is very ready. I spoke to the Taoiseach about that. It is the only next steps that are required to be taken is that because it's a foreign affairs issue, it being an extradition treaty, the Taoiseach needs to bring a memorandum to government along with myself, and then it comes into force once I sign a document. So I'm hoping that'll be done by the end of February very promptly.
Now, the defamation bill is going to be revived by the government, and one of the proposals is that there would be the abolition of juries in defamation cases. You have previously spoken out against that.
Yeah, I have. And look, I suppose I have to be conscious as well that when I get into government, I'm bound by the terms of the programme for government. And like there are issues that maybe I don't necessarily fully agree with, and I spoke about them in the Dáil, but sorry, I voted in favour of the defamation bill when it went through second stage. I did have concerns about that, but the primary, I suppose, objective of the government is to get the defamation bill enacted. And there are a couple of other measures that have to be brought through committee stage. I've been meeting with my officials in respect of it. The Attorney General has been very helpful in respect of it. We're drafting committee stage amendments. They'll go to the Justice Committee, and I'm hoping to see it enacted this term.
Will it do away with the idea of vexatious actions that are designed to, say, silence media?
Well, in the bill as it's originally there, there is a provision dealing with strategic litigation against public participation.
So-called slaps.
They're called slaps. But can I just say this to you as well? Like, cases when they're run, people may get a lot of notoriety when they issue cases. People lose defamation cases. And media defendants are entitled to defend them, and they win very many of those cases. So I've got to balance, I know the media are very vocal on this issue, I've also got to balance the right to the constitutional right to people's good name. There's no organisation really representing the citizens in respect to that. So it's a balancing act.
But if, for example, a politician takes an action against a newspaper in order to silence that newspaper's criticism, or radio stations or television stations, and then they win and they get their costs.
The newspaper wins.
Yeah, the newspaper wins. They get their costs. Yeah. Are they ever likely to be paid by said
Absolutely. They should enforce it. If it's a politician, the politician is likely to have an asset, they have a salary. It should be enforced. Media defendants win defamation cases. So this is not a one-way street the way it's sometimes presented.
Now, just looking at today's headlines, the Irish Times has a poll, which you might want to comment on, about how would you vote in a referendum for Irish unity. And you can see from the, I'm showing Jim here, the colour graph from the Irish Times. And for the Republic, you know, there's a predictable yes, 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 yes. In Northern Ireland, there's not a majority yet for unity. And when you go to the communities, you see there would be a majority, but not an overwhelming majority in Catholic areas, and a definite no from loyalist or Protestant areas.
It's a very interesting poll, and Aaron's and the Irish Times deserve to be commended for doing this research in this area. I think we need to get away from just looking at the binary choice about how you vote in the border poll. Contact between the communities and trust between the two jurisdictions is really increasing considerably. And I think the shared island unit has played a significant part of that. And listen, as people move on and we see the importance of the economy, and like Ireland, the South is changing considerably, Northern Ireland is changing as well, people don't look at it in the old-fashioned green and orange terms. And I just think it's a very important conversation that we need to have into the future. And like I think we need to get away from looking at when will the border poll be, issues like that. I think we need to start continuing to build trust between the two communities on the island.
Anyway, it's an interesting poll, and it's there. Now, some of the comments coming in from our listeners, ask the minister if he plans to change the outrageous bail laws. That's from Mike. This is the proposal, I suppose, to keep people who have multiple convictions behind bars pending their trial, because often they'll kind of go out and do it all again to provide for their incarceration.
Yeah, well, I'm reminded in 1997, the people were offered the option of amending our constitution so people could be refused bail if the courts believed there was a likelihood they could commit further offence, serious offences. And it was overwhelmingly supported by the people. And the Bail Act was implemented on foot of that. Judges are, from my experience, now refusing to give bail to individuals if they believe they're going to commit further offences. Obviously, it may need to be tightened up. I'll commit to looking at it. But in terms of ensuring that the community is safe, I think if judges are told by members of An Garda Síochána that there's a concern that the person before the court is likely to commit a serious offence, that person should not be granted bail.
Another one here. If this country is interested in helping women, why did it take 6 years to convict the three men who were convicted of sexual assault and rape this week? That's from John Lynch. I mean, that's so slow.
It is extremely slow. But can I say this to you? The area that's getting faster now is once the DPP makes a decision to prosecute, and there's a book of evidence, we now have 10 or 11 Central Criminal Court judges hearing cases. So it's speeding up much faster. Sometimes the delay, Pat, is in respect of the investigation. And in fairness to the Gardaí, this is no criticism of them, but sometimes, particularly in historic sexual offences, it takes the Gardaí a long time to put a file together, to interview people, to complete the investigation. But certainly a delayed justice system is not an efficient one, or it's not a fair one.
My son got a job last year with An Garda Síochána as a clerical worker. He's doing the job Garda used to do, but he's earning half of what a Garda is earning. So hence he's now looking to leave. Even with his degree, etc., he's earning less than €500 a week. That's from a listener in Dublin.
I think that that son should apply to join An Garda Síochána. His salary will go up. He sounds like a very competent person, and he's a person that the Garda would like.
Is that not an inequity that someone doing exactly the same job that someone in uniform was doing is now doing it? It sounds like cheap labour.
Well, it's a different function. I suppose huge responsibilities come with being a member of An Garda Síochána. You have the powers of arrest. That's something that the clerical worker wouldn't have. But I'd appeal to his parents to ask him to consider joining the Gardaí.
Can we get clarity on when the Garda reserves will start training? And please ask the minister to explain what's been done to sort out Garda vetting, as this seems to be a huge issue in relation to the time the applications take to get sorted.
Unfortunately, we only have 319 members of the Garda reserve at present. We need to really recruit more. And I suppose I can understand why the commissioner doesn't want to start that recruitment campaign now, at the time that we're in the process of trying to recruit Garda. But once this recruitment campaign is over, I think we need to focus on trying to recruit more into the reserve. People don't really mind if they see somebody in a uniform, whether they're reserve or whether they're a member of the force. It still provides that sense of protection and safety, particularly in cities. Respect of vetting, I've received a report on that. There's far too much delay in respect of it. Obviously, you have to be very careful, Pat, if people are going to get offered jobs with children. Mm-hmm. You have to ensure that you assess their background. What can delay it is if people are from other jurisdictions sometimes, or have lived in other jurisdictions. It can sometimes take a while, but it needs to be speeded up. And I have a report on my desk about it.
Please ask the minister, where are we with body cams and with facial recognition technology for the Gardaí?
Well, body cams are coming in. Many guards are using them now. I want to see all of them using them. I support facial recognition technology. I think if, as a police force, we can't sort of hide behind the advancement in technology. Some people have expressed concern about facial recognition technology as though individuals are going to be convicted in a court of law solely on the basis of facial recognition technology. That's not going to happen. It's an invaluable tool, however, for investigation. And if we're trying to get more Gardaí out in the street, we need to have proper technology to save them spending the time looking through CCTV footage for hours.
Could you ask the minister what's his view on people having tattoos? My son has an honours law degree from university but is not allowed to join the force because of his tattoos. Is this discrimination? Also, I'm a prison officer and was assaulted last May by a dangerous prisoner. I'm suffering from PTS but on a waiting list to see a psychiatrist since then. I have private insurance, but the prisoner who assaulted me has been offered this service free months ago, but I'm on a waiting list. It's totally soul-destroying. So two queries there, tattoos and the Gardaí.
Well, in terms of tattoos, my understanding is that there's no problem with you joining the force if you have a tattoo which isn't visible. Sometimes there's an issue. There is an issue in respect of tattoos which are visible. I think we need to move on from that. People have tattoos. They're perfectly entitled to have tattoos, the same way as they're perfectly entitled to wear jewellery. So I don't think it should preclude people from...
But will you...
Unless they had, I suppose, something which was very provocative.
You've anticipated my question.
Like if you
you're going to have a tattoo inspector for those recruits.
Well, I don't think you need a tattoo inspector, but I think if somebody had something which is really offensive to certain communities written on their hands, like that would be something that would preclude entry. In terms of the prison officer, I'm very sorry to hear that he was assaulted. By the way, there was a prison officer very seriously assaulted earlier last week or over the weekend. Very concerned about him. Prison officers do a really dangerous job, but it's a hugely important job. In terms of what he says about the prisoner, I was in Clover Hill prison yesterday. Like the message I was getting was that a lot of prisoners in there who are in need of psychiatric attention aren't getting the type of treatment that they really require.
But if you have a prisoner who did the assault getting treatment before the prison officer...
Well, that shouldn't be happening. The prison officer should be getting the treatment first.
Ask the minister about the granting of legal aid, more or less automatically, often to people who have means. That's from John.
Well, again, we're going. That's an area that I've asked for a report on. There's legislation that I've asked to be drafted in respect of reform of the legal aid scheme. The judge has to assess accurately whether or not the person can pay for the cost of legal representation in criminal trials, particularly. Like, the problem, if we don't do that, somebody's going to take a case to Europe and they're going to say Ireland has an unfair system because a person was accused of an offence, they didn't have legal representation. So unfortunately, it is
but
something
is there,
we're required
is there an
to
issue
do.
Of people who are repeat offenders again and again and again requiring the taxpayer to fund the defence?
Yeah, there is an issue with that. And what we need to ensure is that, you know, if a mechanism is in place that we can try and recoup that money from them. But like, the answer I'd like to give is not the answer that I can give. Because if somebody is charged with a serious offence which can result in their incarceration, if we don't provide them with legal representation, the European Court of Human Rights and the CJEU are going to say that's not fair because there's inequity in the treatment at the trial.
A couple of final questions. We didn't build Thornton Hall. Prisons are overcrowded. What are the plans?
The plans are in the programme for government. We're committed to increasing the prison population by, or prison spaces by 1,500. I've had two very good meetings with Karen McCaffrey, the head of the prison service. We will have 1,100 new places coming up. I'm aware of the pressure in the prison system. We need to ensure we get immediate spaces, and work is being done.
Are they going to be done on existing campuses?
They will be done on existing campuses. And as well as that, in the programme for government, we're committed to a new prison. The population is rising. I know sometimes people say, oh, why are we building new prisons? With the rise in our population, it's inevitable that we're going to need a new prison. So that's something that I'm going to push for in the National
Last question. A number of Gardaí have been in touch about this. Please get us back on the streets and not endlessly sitting in front of a computer tearing our hair out for an excess of administration.
I agree 100%. And that's what I'm seeking to do. That's what I've said to the Commissioner. I'd say he's tired of listening to me saying it. I'm meeting him again this afternoon and I'll repeat it again.
Jim O'Callaghan, newly appointed Minister for Justice. Jim, thank you very much. I'll ask you one last question, if you don't mind. What would mark success in your book, in your tenure of as Minister?
Well, at the end of 5 years, I would like to have reforms in place and to make people feel safer in the community. The legislation I said in respect of women, I'd like to have that domestic violence register. I'd like to change the Guardianship of Infants Act so that people who murder a partner will have their guardianship removed or the process whereby it can be removed. I'd like to see a safer community. We're always going to have crime, by the way. I think we need to recognise that. And the more Gardaí we have, by the way, the more crime we're going to detect, and crime is going to go up. But I just would like people to feel safer in their communities. That's my primary objective.
And that's a worthy ambition. Minister Jim O'Callaghan, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.